and thank you for calling in if you do. I would like to mention some phone calls I've had over the week about the Chena Hot Springs Road shooting range, which is at 36.5 mile Chena Hot Springs Road. First of all, people call and tell me that the State Division of Parks and Recreation has put up a gate at the road on that shooting range so that you can no longer drive across the old gravel pit to the shooting range. And I understand there's some there's a notice out there talking about this and saying that they no longer want vehicles driving over there. But if you really need to, you can go to the Department of Parks and Recreation here in Fairbanks and buy a permit. I'm not sure how much it costs, but it costs money. You can buy a permit, and they will give you the key and a permit, and you will be allowed to unlock that gate and drive over to the shooting range and shoot for a period of time. And then you can drive out and lock the gate and take the key back to the Department of Parks and Recreation. And I'm not really sure. I've heard various reasons why this is going on. First, I heard that they didn't want cars going in there because somebody might start a forest fire. And then I heard that, well, you have to pay a fee to go in there and shoot, and so it's just another method of making money for a state agency by charging the users of a state facility after that state facility has been originally built by state money, which is your money. And so I'm not sure what it is now, but there is a telephone number on that sign at the gate at 36.5 mile Chena Hot Springs Road. And I would recommend that anybody who can drive out there and get that phone number, call them and query them about that gate. Why is it necessary to close that gate so that people can't drive over there and shoot? I mean, to stop on the road and park your car on the edge of the road and walk all the way across there, that's pretty difficult because you'd have to carry all your shooting gear, your gun, your ammunition, your targets, your earmuffs, your eye protection, and a bag to carry your trash away in. You'd have to carry all that stuff over there and all the way back. And it seems like a little imposition on the shooters. And so my philosophy is that the Department of Parks and Recreation is supposed to be managing the land for the recreation of the Alaskans. They should not be restricting the recreation of Alaskans. And when you start putting up a gate with a lock on it and telling people they first have to come to a Fairbanks office to pay money and get a key before they can use that facility, that just doesn't seem like the proper function of a state department to me. So let me go back just a little bit in history. Before that shooting range was there, I was appointed to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee for the interior of Alaska here, and we met monthly at the office of the Parks and Recreation, and they told us what they were planning to do with facilities, and we would offer suggestions, and sometimes they were taken. But one of the things I noticed was I drove out Chena Hot Springs, and out at about 25 mile Chena Hot Springs Road, I saw a sign that said, "No shooting next 25 miles." Wow. I said, "Where did that come from?" It was the Department of Parks and Recreation sign on the side of the road that said, "No shooting next 25 miles." Well, I didn't know the Parks and Recreation could do that. We've been hunting out there for many, many years, and we do use guns for hunting, and hunting is allowed by the Fish and Game Department. So I went to the department, and I asked them about that, and they said, "Well, we don't want shooting all up and down the road at every little gravel pit and turnoff We think that would be dangerous for the tourists that go camping out there. And so we've decided to eliminate all shooting on that 25-mile section of road. And I thought that over, and I said to them, look, if you want to avoid shooting in every little gravel pit and pull-off along that road, then what you need to do is build a shooting range and invite everyone to come and do their shooting at that shooting range. And then it will all be done safely and in a proper place with a proper backstop, and you can allow shooting anywhere else along the road, but people won't be doing it because they're shooting at the shooting range that you will build and maintain. And so they took our suggestion, and they built the shooting range at 36.5 mile Chino Hot Springs Road. It's not a very long range. It's not quite 200 yards, but it's a perfectly safe range. It's got a few, three or four tables to shoot from, and there was an old outhouse there. They've since put in a new outhouse, very nice new Department of Parks outhouse, and people have been going there and shooting for a long time, and of course, as shooters sometimes do, they have been leaving trash. Sometimes people put boxes or targets or anything out there to shoot at, even old TV sets, and they shoot at them and then they walk away and leave them. Not good. Not good. So the Sportsman's Club, the Tenino Valley Sportsman's Club, started going out there periodically and cleaning the range. Very good thing for them to do, and I helped in that several times. And then the Department of Parks and Recreation began cleaning it every so often, I think about weekly. And so it has been kept clean. There was even one Eagle Scout who organized a cleaning day and got everybody to come out there with their pickup trucks and take away the trash. So it has been kept fairly clean, thanks to the department and the people. But now, for some reason, the Department of Parks and Recreation has changed their mind and decided that they don't want you to drive to that range, and they want you to pay and get a permit and have a reservation for a certain day in order for you to go and use that range. And I think that's a shame, but I'm not on the advisory committee anymore, and I don't have a direct line into the Department of Parks and Recreation. So I would suggest that that's your job. If you look into this and decide that that's a facility that should be free to the recreational shooters of interior Alaska, then you should tell the Department of Parks and Recreation that you believe they should take that gate down and they should allow you access to that shooting range that was built with state money. And perhaps by if enough of us call and tell that story to the Department of Parks and Recreation, maybe we can get them to pay attention to what I think is their main purpose, and that is providing recreational opportunities for the shooters of interior Alaska. Their purpose should not be to restrict the recreational opportunities for the shooters of Alaska. They should be looking for more ways to provide us with more shooting opportunities. This community has grown tremendously since I came here many years ago. It used to be a city of 20,000. Now it's a community of 100,000. And there are a lot of recreational shooters, and we need more ranges open for these people to go and shoot at. So anyway, I've got to go to my first break now, but I'll be back if you want to call and talk about that or talk about some other things. I have some other topics that I will introduce very shortly. Hang in there. Thank you for listening. I'll be right back.
Keep it here for more Shooter's Corner after this.
When you know the person who works on your car or truck, that's worth something. It gives a level of confidence that's hard to come by. That's Rogers Auto Repair. Family-owned and operated, Rogers is your complete automotive repair shop. Tune-ups, winterizing, Even engine and transmission rebuilds are all done right in their shop on Dale Road near the airport. So call the folks with experience and a sound reputation. Call Rogers Auto Repair. You'll be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair.
You still have time to get out and play in your new Jayco travel trailer from Arctic RV. Summer is calling you out on the road. See more of Alaska and play there longer. Visit Arctic RV. Discover Jayco quality, comfort, amenities, and floor plans that fit your lifestyle. Even if you drive an SUV, there's the perfect Jayco travel trailer just for you at Arctic RV. See their gently used motorhomes as well. Rough it in style. Arctic RV.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design. It's that time of the year when projects tend to take over many lives. Be it work or play, your truck bed will take a beating. You need to protect your investment with an Arctic Spray-On Bedliner from Auto Trim Design. Our Arctic Spray-On Bedliner was developed as a commercial coating for use on the Alaska pipeline exposed to extreme Arctic conditions. Why should you or I settle for anything sub-quality? Get your Arctic Spray-On Bedliner today at Auto Trim Design, because as Bob says...
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
All the news you'll need in one place. This is KFAR Radio.
I'm having a great time listening to the radio here and just sort of listening to everyone's comments.
660 AM and 97.
Well, we're back. There's the theme song music. We're back with another segment of... Shooter's Corner on Thursday, the 25th of July. And I do want to mention my sponsors. I really appreciate the sponsors that have stayed with me so long. And the reason they have is because you are listening to the program and you are telling the sponsors that you appreciate the program and want to keep listening to it. Then the sponsors will keep sponsoring the program. But I want to thank Frontier Outfitters. They've been a sponsor for a very long time. It's over 14 years now. And also Arctic RV over there on 30th Avenue at the corner of Pegger Road. And Rogers Auto Repair, which will take care of all of your automotive needs on Dale Road. And Auto Trim Design. Auto Trim Design out there on South Cushman that has everything you need to dress up your car and make it more usable and friendly and dependable in the wintertime in Alaska. Those are my four sponsors, and I appreciate them, and I hope you will appreciate them also. I do just want to mention my book one more time. I'm still selling the book, my autobiography. The name of it is Not Your Average Joe. And if you want a copy of that book, they are selling it at Frontier Outfitters, and it's $20, and that whole $20 goes to the scholarship fund at the university for the university rifle team. Also, if you want, you can get a book from me. You can come by my house when I'm available. Call to be sure I'm going to be here, and I would be happy to sign a book to you and sell it to you and give the $20 to the University Scholarship Fund. Also, I will have a book signing at Clear Sky Sportsman's Club on the third day of August. That's a week from Saturday. And we'll start at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, and I'll be there until late in the afternoon. It's a two-day shoot they have there, and but I won't be there the second day, Sunday. I will only be there on the third Saturday. But if you get a chance, go on down and take part in the shooting and win some of the prizes. And if you want to meet me there, I'd be happy to sell a book to you and sign the book to you. I want to thank the Clear Sky Lodge Sportsman's Club members for inviting me down. And I will enjoy that very much. Not this weekend, but the following weekend on the third day of August. Okay, so that's Clear Sky for selling books. We've got that taken care of. Then we come to the main topic I wanted to talk about today was big guns, because a couple of weeks ago I talked about small guns, I looked up some of the smaller guns that have been made. Small meaning still usable, not really miniature, so that they're not even usable, but small usable guns like the 2 millimeter Cole Ribby, the 2 millimeter Cole Ribby, or the 3 millimeter Swiss mini gun. But now, today, I want to talk about big guns, but let's take a phone call first. Good morning. You're on Shooter's Corner.
Yeah, Joe, just as a comfort, based on your opening statement, you are coming through loud and clear.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. I'm glad that I am coming through loud and clear, and I'm glad that you're out there listening, and thank you for giving me that phone call. Back to the big guns. When we talk about big guns, we've got to go beyond what you can hold on to your shoulder. They make rifles of very big size. And they are rifles because they have rifling inside the barrel. Originally, there were some guns, like the one I talked about 2 weeks ago, the 2-millimeter Cole Ribby. It didn't have any rifling inside the barrel, so it was very inaccurate. The rifling adds accuracy to the gun. Well, these big guns all have rifling to try and attain a better accuracy. But when we're talking about big guns, we're talking about artillery, what they call howitzers, the big artillery guns that are intended to shoot a cartridge way over there and let it land way over there. So we don't have to get close to something to throw shells at it and have a lot of disruption and explosions and fire and so forth. And many of these guns were developed in the First World War. And there was a lot of artillery shooting going back and forth in the First World War all over Europe. And a lot of it was between Germany and France. And back then, it seems like if one country could overtake and capture the capital city of another country, then they had won the battle and the whole country caved in and they had taken that country. And so the Germans were at that time trying to take Paris. And the Germans were developing these long-range guns, very big guns, in order to shell Paris. And that's why they were called Paris guns. And that's what the fellow called on an earlier program and asked me about Paris guns. Well, they were called Paris guns because they were developed for the purpose of shelling Paris. And Paris protected itself by building forts on all sides of Paris, out away from the city a ways, in order to protect the city so that if any of these big guns came near Paris, these forts with artillery would shoot at the German artillery to keep it out of range of Paris. So the Germans just kept developing bigger and bigger guns so they could shoot farther and farther and go right over the forts and into the city of Paris. They didn't have to get near the forts in order to be able to put a shell into Paris. They could shoot a shell over 5 miles, and that's quite a long way for a heavy piece of artillery. So that's why they were called Paris guns, and there were a lot of artillery battles between the forts protecting Paris and the siege guns of the Germans that were trying to take Paris. Now, these guns were big guns. The Paris guns were usually around 11 inches in diameter. That would be the diameter of the shell that goes into the city of Paris, would be about 11 inches in diameter. But then they kept developing it bigger and bigger until they got to the largest one. They only built a few of these. They were called Big Bertha. Big Bertha was made by the Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, ironworks in Germany. And they made this gun, which at the time was the largest rifle ever made, and it was 17 inches in diameter in the inside of the barrel, and so that was the size of the bullet that went out of the barrel and headed off 5 miles or so and hopefully landed somewhere inside the city of Paris. Pinpoint accuracy was not very important to them. They just wanted to drop that bullet somewhere in the city of Paris where it might cause an explosion and a fire and disrupt everything in the city. That's what they did. And so they developed this big one, which was 17 inches in diameter. And at the time, this is in the First World War, it was used in the war between 1914 and 1918, at which time Germany lost the war and lost all of their big guns to the enemies. That would be France and Great Britain and the United States. And Germany then had no more of these big guns. You think about a diameter of a shell, 17 inches, the thing probably weighed a ton. The shell probably weighed a ton, and it took a tremendous amount of powder to send that shell all the way 5 miles over to Paris, but that's what they did. And they had a lot of difficulty with the guns, mostly with the ammunition. They said the ammunition was faulty, and it sometimes exploded before they were ready, and it exploded in the open breech of the gun and destroyed the gun. So they destroyed some of their own guns with the bad ammunition, and of course the forts were still trying to destroy these big guns as well. And so, like I said, at the time, these were the largest guns that had ever been made, and the big one, Big Bertha, 17 inches in bore diameter, was mounted on a railroad car. That was the way it was moved around. It was moved around on railroad tracks. Nothing else was big enough or heavy enough. They couldn't take it along the road. It was just too big and too heavy to tow around on the road. And it was very big. It took a lot of people to handle this gun and to reload it. And most of these big guns, like Big Bertha, could only shoot about 8 times every hour. That's how long it took to clear the gun after a shot and then clean it out and then load it up and get it ready for the next shot, put in the shell and the powder, the ammunition, and get it ready to fire. And but they could only make about 8 shots a minute with that Big Bertha. And the other guns, remember the Paris guns, which were around 11 inches in diameter. Now, I say at the time, that's the time of the Second World War, First World War. That was the biggest gun there was. But later on during the Second World War, the Japanese developed even larger guns than that. But I'm looking at the clock here, and I think I hear the music coming on, so let's wait. Let's wait and talk about the big guns of the Second World War in the second part of this program after the half-hour news. I'm going to turn it back over to the break. Hang in there. Keep listening. I'll be right back with more big gun information shortly. Soft and
low. All the news you'll need in one place. This is KFAR Radio, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Spokesman for a union representing workers for the Alaska Ferry System says the union has gone on strike. Rob Arnold says the union went on strike Wednesday afternoon. He says the Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific remains open to reaching a deal with the state. A spokesman for Governor Mike Dunleavy referred a reporter to a statement released by the state Tuesday night outlining deals of an impasse between the two sides. A remote hunting lodge that serves as a checkpoint in Alaska's famed Iditarod Trail sled dog race has been evacuated after lightning sparked a wildfire nearby. KTUU reports 26 employees and guests of the Rainy Pass Lodge were evacuated Tuesday night and flown 125 miles to Anchorage. The American Red Cross provided shelter for 12. The rest made other accommodations. Community and tribal leaders in a remote Alaska village say they've signed a new land exchange agreement with the Interior Department that could lead to construction of a road through a national wildlife refuge. The village of King Cove, near the tip of the Alaska Peninsula, for decades has been seeking a land connection through Izembek National.
When you know the person who works on your car or truck, that's worth something. It gives a level of confidence that's hard to come by. That's Rogers Auto Repair. Family-owned and operated, Rogers is your complete automotive repair shop. Tune-ups, winterizing, even engine and transmission rebuilds are all done right in their shop on Dale Road near the airport. So call the folks with experience and a sound reputation. Call Rogers Auto Repair. You'll be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers.
You still have time to get out and play in your new Jayco travel trailer from Arctic RV. Summer is calling you out on the road. See more of Alaska and play there longer. Visit Arctic RV. Discover Jayco quality, comfort, amenities, and floor plans that fit your lifestyle. Even if you drive an SUV, there's the perfect Jayco travel trailer just for you at Arctic RV. See their gently used motorhomes as well. Rough it in style. Arctic.
Except for us Alaskans, there's gardens to grow, fish to catch, building projects, adventures, and preparing for next winter. Auto Trim Design can help you with Arctic Spray-On bed liners to protect your bed, mud flaps, floor mats, car stereo, running boards, clear toppers, paint protection film, and much more. Get your auto start installed today to beat the fall rush and watch our sign for weekly specials. Auto Trim Design, as Bob says,
we'll
all the news you'll need in one place. This is KFAR Radio, 660. AM and 97.5 FM.
Well, we're back. There's the theme music for Joe Nava's Shooter's Corner. We're back for the last half of today's program on the 25th of July, 2019. It's a pleasure to be with you. I just look forward to Saturday mornings. I really enjoy sitting here and talking to you over the radio, and I would love to have your phone calls with your questions and your comments and your suggestions about things you'd like me to talk about in the future. But remember, in the second, First World War, the largest gun was the Big Bertha, that had a diameter, a bore diameter of 17 inches, and could shoot about 5 miles. But in the Second World War, they started to make bigger guns, and the country that made the biggest guns was Japan. Japan in the Second World War had a very large naval fleet, very powerful. They proved that when they attacked Pearl Harbor on the 7th of December in 1941. I remember listening about that on the radio when I was just a youngster. But they kept building bigger and bigger. And at that time, the battleship was the main piece of armory for a country. If you had lots of big battleships, you could push all the other navies around. And so Tokyo was building a very large crew of battleships and smaller ships as well. And so they launched on a program of building the biggest battleship ever. The biggest battleship ever built was the Yamato. Yamato, Y-A-M-A-T-O, the Yamato. It was huge. And they outfitted it with bigger guns than any battleship had ever had before. Remember, the Big Bertha in the First World War was 17 inches in bore diameter. Well, the Yamato had 9 big guns. They had lots of guns all over the ship of all sizes for all purposes. But the 9 big guns that they had for the purpose of shooting at other ships, like other battleships or other troop ships or aircraft carriers or whatever, those 9 guns were 18.1 inches in bore diameter. And so you can imagine the size of the shell that it could send out there, 5 or 6 miles or however far they could shoot it, and they didn't even have to see the other ship. It could be beyond the horizon, and they could still reach out there and, with a little bit of accuracy, hopefully hit the other ship. And by the time the Yamato was built, it was outdated, because the battleships and all these heavy naval ships that had been fighting and winning wars for hundreds of years, they were overtaken by air power. And Billy Mitchell was one of the officers who was a proponent of air power, and he had a hard time getting the old people in the military to accept air power because they were so tied to these big battleships and cruisers and destroyers. But finally, we started building aircraft carriers and started developing airplanes that could attack ships. And so when the Yamato went into some of the battles, like the Battle of Leyte Gulf in the Second World War, they came up against aircraft carriers who were sending airplanes toward them. And these were dive bombers and torpedo bombers. And if they could hit the ship with a bomb or a torpedo, they could do it great damage. And so Japanese Navy lost the Battle of Leyte Gulf and the Battle of Midway. And from then on, they lost all the major naval battles in the war for various reasons or other. And the Japanese discovered that this big, huge battleship that they had, the Yamato, was really not much use. And these huge, big guns, the nine of them, were not much good, because before you could even get within shooting range of an aircraft carrier, the airplanes from that aircraft carrier were dropping bombs on you and sending torpedoes at you, and you were having to spend all your time fighting off the airplanes that were trying to sink you. And so they brought the Yamato back to Japan, and they had it in several different ports in Japan for the last part of the war. And then they decided that it wasn't much use there in Tokyo, so they decided to send it back down into the South Pacific. And the orders for the Yamato were go down there and try to sink all the troop transports and aircraft carriers and everything you can find, sink everything you can find. And when you can't do any more, beach yourself on one of those islands down there and then fight as a fixed fort for the rest of the war. That's what they were intended to do. But on the way down there, they were intercepted by a task force of the Allies, and they had several aircraft carriers and small aircraft carriers. And it was the airplanes from the aircraft carriers that finally sunk the Yamato. The Yamato was sunk by dive bombers and torpedo bombers. There were also some Allied submarines in the area as well. But all of these together sank the Yamato, which was the largest battleship ever built. And when they sunk it, it finally tipped over, it went upside down and went to the bottom of the ocean upside down. But the interesting thing was that these nine guns that were out on the deck, the big guns, the 18.1-inch guns, were in groups of three. There would be three guns in one turret all together, and there were three of these turrets, and the turrets were attached to the deck of the Yamato. But when the Yamato turned upside down, those guns proved too heavy for the attachments that were holding them to the deck. And they tore away from the deck and sank separately from the ship. So those three big batteries of three 18.1-inch guns apiece sank to the bottom of the ocean near where the Yamato went down, but not directly with it and no longer a part of it. And there was another battleship built about the same time by Japan, and it was supposed to be a sister ship of the Yamato, so they could go out and fight together whenever necessary. But they had drawn that one back and kept it at Japan, and it never did see any more service until the end of the war. But that's the story of the Yamato, the largest battleship ever built, and it held the largest guns ever built, 18.1 inches in diameter. We talk about guns and we think about rifles and pistols, but today you could put a rifle up to your shoulder, and it can be a small one, a .22 caliber, with hardly any recoil at all, or you can get bigger than that, go up to .30 caliber, or they even go now up to .50 caliber. The military uses a lot of .50 caliber. The snipers use .50 calibers. A lot of the machine guns use .50 calibers. But .50 caliber is just a little bit big, and it's more than you need for normal hunting and target practicing. But you won't find shoulder-held rifles today any larger than .50 caliber. And the .50 caliber is pretty expensive. It's expensive to buy. The ammunition is expensive. You wind up having to load your own ammunition to make it financially practical. And they are nice guns. There are some really nice .50 caliber guns, but they're not very practical. And it's a very heavy gun to lug around in the woods while you're looking for a moose or a bear or a caribou. So when we think of big rifles that you hold in your shoulder, we think of nothing larger than .50 caliber, which is a 1/2 inch. It's a 1/2 inch diameter bullet. So that'll give you some perspective on the 18.1 inch diameter cases that were thrown by the rifles on the Yamato battleship that Tokyo used during the Second World War. And there really hasn't been a building program for battleships ever since the Second World War. We've been building cruisers and destroyers and aircraft carriers. The aircraft carriers seem to be a much more potent weapon in today's wartime than the battleships used to be, because you can attack another ship that's a long way off without exposing your own ship to them, unless they have airplanes too. And that's what a lot of the battles in the Second World War were two aircraft carriers fighting against each other. Let's take another phone call. Good morning. You're on Shooter's Corner.
Good morning, Joe. You triggered something in me when you were talking about Billy Mitchell. When I was just a lad, they made a movie about Mitchell. And at any rate, he was evidently such a progressive thinker that he infuriated his superiors so badly that they court-martialed him.
Yes, that's right. They did. He was so far ahead of his time, they thought he was crazy.
Yeah, and at any rate, they made a movie of that I saw, and the illustration at the end was absolutely incredible, where Mitchell walked out of the court-martial hearing building and looked up in the sky, and there were four or five biplanes flying over in formation, and, you know, that ripple effect they put through the screen?
Yeah.
Anyway, the screen rippled, and it went to the Thunderbirds in a high bomb burst.
Wow.
It was very, very moving.
Yes, it would be. I remember the Billy Mitchell movie from a long time ago, and I remember the key problem that he had was he wanted to bring his airplanes down close enough so they could be sure their bombs would hit the ship.
Right. I think the differential was he was supposed to go in at 5,000 feet with 3,000-pound bombs, and he went in at 3,000 feet with 5,000-pound bombs and sunk the target ship.
Well, the problem was, on his first trial, they wouldn't allow him to come below 12,000 feet. And, of course, they couldn't hit anything from 12,000 feet, but that was those were the rules they put on Billy Mitchell's airplanes, that he had to hit that ship from 12,000 feet. And, of course, he couldn't do it, and so they just laughed at him and sent him away at that point until later on.
But anyway, I just wanted to share that with the listeners.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you did, and I appreciate the call. I always appreciate the comments of other listeners. Thank you for that call.
All right.
It's almost time for our last break. I think I hear the music coming, and we're going to go to our last break, and I'll be back with you for one more segment to take your phone calls about anything. You don't have to be calling about Billy Mitchell or the Second World War or big guns or whatever you want. If there's something else you'd like to talk about, just give me a call and let me know. And as long as it has to do with shooting, I'm happy to have it on Shooter's Corner. I'll be right back.
Joe Nava will be right back with more Shooter's Corner.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design. It's that time of the year when projects tend to take over many lives. Be it work or play, your truck bed will take a beating. You need to protect your investment with an Arctic Spray-On Bedliner from Auto Trim Design. Our Arctic Spray-On Bedliner was developed as a commercial coating for use on the Alaska pipeline exposed to extreme Arctic conditions. Why should you or I settle for anything sub-quality? Get your Arctic Spray-On Bedliner today at Auto Trim Design. Because as Bob says,
we will be here when the other guys...
If silver salmon fishing in Valdez is in your plans, stop into Frontier Outfitters before you get on the road. For all the fishing gear, licenses, and tags you'll need, from rods to reels, from lures to lines, and nets to sunglasses, Frontier Outfitters knows what you need for a successful trip. Why waste your valuable fishing time looking for gear in Valdez when it's at Frontier Outfitters today? Plus, marine parts and equipment downstairs at Century Hardware. Make Frontier Outfitters your first stop. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
With some things, one size doesn't fit all. Hearing aids are one of those things. Fairbanks Hearing and Balance wants you to know that with a hearing aid, the sale is just the beginning of the process. A properly fit and tuned hearing aid can take someone with severe hearing loss and let them hear, but that tuning can only be done successfully by someone who knows what they're doing, like a certified audiologist. It's the small adjustments that can make the difference between a frustrating experience and an incredible one. Let the experts and medical professionals at the Fairbanks Hearing and Balance Center help with your hearing loss.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR weather.
As expected, near 75. Showers likely tonight, mainly after 2 a.m. with areas of smoke. Mostly cloudy, lows tonight expected around 57. Tomorrow, Friday, calling for showers likely mainly before 11, mostly cloudy, and highs expected near 68. A peak of the weekend, calling for scattered showers, highs hovering near 70, lows around 52. And that's your latest Fairbanks area weather forecast.
You can now find the legendary KFAR on the FM dial at 97.5 in full stereo. KFAR, the heartbeat of Alaska.
Well, we're back. There's the theme song. We're back with the last segment of Shooter's Corner. Let's take another phone call. Good morning. You're on Shooter's Corner.
Hello, Joe.
Yes.
Hey, I just wonder if you ever heard of the Gustav gun. It was made by Krupp, in, I think, in the late 30s. Suppose they had a bore of 31 and a half inches and shot a 7-ton shell 29 miles.
No, I never heard of that one, but I'll look it up and see what I can find. When was it they made it?
It was made by Germany, by Krupp. It was called the, I think you pronounce it, Schwer-Gustav gun.
When?
They made two of them.
When?
But, pardon me?
When did they make it?
It was in the late, or no, the early 40s, I think it was.
So it might have been involved in the Second World War?
Right. It was a railway gun. It was supposedly the largest gun ever made. I know you were saying the Japanese made one, but it was called the Gustav, G-U-S-T-A-V, I believe.
Well, I'll take a look at it and see what I can find, but I hadn't run into it. I know that Krupp was the works that made the biggest guns. They made the Big Bertha and all the other Paris guns. They've been around for a very long time.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
thanks. I'll look that up and see what I can find. I appreciate the call on that.
No problem. I got a quick question about shooting. Is it legal to shoot along a power line?
Yes, it's legal to shoot along the power line. You just can't shoot at the power line.
Right, right. Is it a good clear area, you know, a couple hundred yards or something like that? I just didn't know if it was.
Yeah, if there aren't any signs saying private land, no trespassing or anything like that, you certainly could. Yeah, just look out for where the houses are and what your backstop is, and
right.
Nothing wrong with shooting on a power line.
Yeah. Hey, also, I just remember, too, that they also made, the Germans had some really big guns they were working on. I don't know if they ever got them going or not, but they had these, they were permanently mounted, and they were permanently aimed at London, and they had, they were huge. I can't remember how big a bore they were or what they were called. I don't think they ever got them operational, though, but anyway, yeah.
No, the Second World War, the Germans were trying everything in order to get some damage over to Great Britain, and they were trying big guns, but the V-2 rocket was the only thing they came up with that had any potential at all. Mostly they did their damage with bombers that flew over and dropped their bombs.
Yeah. Well, hey, good show today, Joe. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks. I appreciate the call. You have a great day.
Okay, bye.
The as far as the big guns are concerned, we talked about the big artillery guns, and those are the big guns. But when we were just starting to shoot with pistols, we were thinking of big guns in handguns, and we can talk about that in a minute. But let's take a phone call first. Good morning. You're on Shooter's Corner.
Good morning, Joe. I don't get to listen very often, and you may already have heard this, about the shooting range at 36 Mile.
I just got through talking about that for about 20 minutes.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm...
Well, you know, this program is going to be in the archives by Monday, so anytime after Monday, if you go into the KFAR archives, you can listen to that whole segment that we talked about, the shooting range on Chino Hot Springs Road.
We drove out there last night. It's a long walk in there.
That's right. It is, and it's not necessary. You should be able to drive.
Okay, I didn't know if you heard about it.
Yep, it's there. Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Yeah, I wish everybody would get involved in that and tell the Department of Parks and Recreation that recreation is shooting. Shooting is recreation, and they should be providing recreational places for shooters. I think every state park should have a public shooting range in it, just like the borough shooting range. There should be more of those. But we were talking about big guns, and 2 weeks ago we talked about small guns, and that got us down into handguns. But when it came to the bigger handguns, people were shooting the 38 Special cartridge, and the that was back in the 1920s. The 38 had been around for quite some time. It was invented in the very late 1800s. And so it was the cartridge that all the police were carrying in their duty firearms. They were carrying 38 Specials. And then it took some shooters to go to the manufacturers to convince them that we needed some more powerful handguns. And in 1935, they developed the 357 Magnum, and that was a lot more powerful than the 38. It had the same size bullet as the 38, but it had a longer case so you could put more powder in it. And at that point, all the police began carrying 357 Magnums because it was larger, more powerful, and more apt to stop a fleeing car, for example, but also more apt to stop a bad guy than the 38. And but some of the cities said, no, we've got too many people in this city. We don't want these powerful 357 Magnums flying around. So our police are only going to carry 38 special ammunition, and they're not allowed to carry anything larger than 38 special, no 357 magnums. So that's when the police went back to the ammunition manufacturers and asked them, can you make the 38 special a little more powerful? And they said, sure, we can put a little more powder in there, a little different kind of powder, and we can give it more power, and we'll give it a new designation. We'll call it a 38 plus P. And so now you can buy a 38 plus P, you can buy a 9 millimeter plus P, you can buy a 44 plus P, a 45 plus P. It simply means that they've taken the standard cartridge and added a little extra power to it through more powder or a different kind of powder, and now it has more power than the original. And so you need to have a modern gun in order to fire the plus P. Some guns will say right on it, plus P, but I wouldn't fire the plus Ps in a very old gun because they probably weren't made to take that much power in the cartridge. So the police never did go any bigger than the 357s. And I used a 357. That's my favorite cartridge because it will do anything I want out in the woods. It'll stop a bear. I can do just about anything. And if someone wants me to put down their old, aged horse, I can do that with a 357. But I can also put 38 specials in it for all my target practice, and it's a whole lot cheaper than the 357s. And so I don't go any bigger than the 357. But back in the 50s, there were a lot of shooters who thought they wanted something bigger and more powerful. They wanted something that would really take down a moose. And so they went to the manufacturers again and talked them into building the 44 Magnum. There was a 44 Special, but they talked the manufacturers into building a gun that would take that 44 cartridge longer and more powerful with more powder. And at that time, that was the most powerful handgun made of any of the production guns in the world at that time. The 44 Magnum handgun was the most powerful handgun made. But the police never did go up that big. It was too big, it was too expensive, and it was an awful lot of recoil. A little difficult to be accurate with it, but a lot of people today still choose the 44 Magnum, and it's fine. It's a big handgun, and it's perfectly fine, and it'll take down a bear. There's no problem. That 44 Magnum bullet will go right through the skull of any grizzly bear you run into. It has the power to do that. But I choose to carry a smaller gun that will do the same thing, and that's my 357 Magnum. So that's it about big guns for today. And remember, we want to be safe with our guns no matter what we do. We want to be safe, and that's why I always say at the end of this show, always keep your gun pointed in a safe direction. And if you do that, you will never hurt anyone with your gun. It's time to end the program today. I've enjoyed being with you. Thank you for the phone calls, and I will be right here back with you next Thursday. Have a great day.
The only thing to guide you is the evening storm. The roughest, the toughest man by far. He's ragtime cowboy Joe. Got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night he said he sings a herd to sleep. In a bass voice so rich and deep, he's crooning so low. He always sings.
News and conversation.